April 16, 1983. Anthropology field trip to Mattapani Indian Reservation. Field trip included my anthropology students, plus the Chesapeake chapter of the Archaeological Society of Virginia.
We're all here.
Oh, there's going to be some more straggling in. My colleague, King Reed, is about 20 minutes behind us. And he'll arrive eventually. All right. This is former Chief Curtis Custolo of the Mattapani. He will tell you what years he was chief, but he was the first of the chiefs that I worked with. He has not only been a leader of his people, but he has been a leader among Eastern American Indians for several years. And he has agreed to talk to you about not only traditional times, and he's knowledgeable there, so he wants to be knowledgeable, but he will also tell you about modern Indian affairs, in which he is very active.
Thank you. Should not be too bad, or...
Oh, why not?
I get my attention someplace along the way. It's a place to have so much fun. Sure that Dr. Roundtree has maybe given you a little bit of advanced knowledge, and I tried status of our reservation.
Some of these folks
maybe
don't know that.
Have not.
No.
Well,
some of these folks I only met this morning, so I haven't had a chance to talk to them.
Okay. The Mattapani tribe in the Aboriginal days were one of the first tribes out of the six that were the original six tribes to correlate to form the First Confederacy now. To give you a little bit of background on the First Confederacy, we have a painting on the back wall there in the wood frame, the rib wood frame of the Great Chief Powhatan. How many of you have ever heard of the Great Chief Powhatan?
Yeah.
Right, okay, well, he lived in the late 15th. Early 1690, passed away in 1618. And he put together, with the help of the six tribes, a confederacy, a form of government, a democratic government. And through those years that he worked with the many tribes in what we know today as Virginia and in the general area, there were 32 tribes by the time the first settlers or European colonial people came to settle in this part of the country. It has been said that that form of government were a very weak government, but not a strong united body of people or strong government because of the depletion so early. I don't go along with that at all. I really don't. At the time, those people faced something they had never faced before. They faced a very unique group of people that were intelligent, and I'm referring to the European people. They were knowledgeable of, I don't like to use this word, but I'll have to, of being able to manipulate people. They had been in the process of dealing with people and manipulating people for many, many years. And our people here were not used to this kind of political endeavor. So I think the executive leaders in many instances were manipulated. They were free in leasing, not giving, but leasing lands. The great Chief Powhatan, in many instances, said that there were enough land for everybody to be able to live comfortable. Now, those were not the exact words, but this is what his intention was. And he was not afraid to, says, come in and abode with me. It's enough land here for everybody. But those people appeared that they was not in the process at that particular time when they come to use the land as per se. They wanted to own the land. And this is something that Native Americans, even until today, has never felt that. that we own the land. And let me say this here and now. I believe today that we do not own the land. The land owns us. I reverse the creation. And I will try to let you understand what I'm saying when I say this. When I say that we do not own the land owns us. If we go back to the very early days of manhood, we were formed from the dust of the earth. And back to the dust of the earth will we return. We're not, the earth is not going to return to us. We're going to return to it. So we do not own it. It owns us. Even though we might sign a document that says, I own this, I own that, I own the other. This has happened all through the ages of time. And it has created great wars. I said all of that. Excuse me. I have a little thing in my throat this morning. But through all ages of time, there have been wars, and great wars, all stemming out of that one process. Lust and greed for land. And it was no different when those people come to this continent. And they saw that it was a vast area of land that, in their opinion, were not being utilized to the fullest potential. I read an article that was written by some of those people in the very early days that said that the land was uninhabited. There were only but 1.5 persons to every mile. Now that is, in our, the way we look at it today, but, you know, they only counted just 1.5 persons. They didn't count the birds, the animals, fish. They didn't count all these other things that had to live from that particular area of land. And for some reason or other, we still don't count all of the other life that living that are living from the lands. We look around at the city that you come from. And how much wildlife do you really see? See a lot of people, they're fighting and squabbling between themselves, you know, they have too much of this and not enough of the other, you know. That's the way it has always been. I think it was like that in the early days too. But nevertheless, the land was taken by a precise method. It was not ceded as it was after the United States government had formulated some of the Western Indians, that the land was ceded. And when I say ceded, the Indians would sacrifice so many million acres of land for whatever little morsel that the government would show to that particular group of Indian people. So much for the formal government early Confederacy. I might just add this to it because I did not. After Powhatan died in 1618, his son, was the great chief for a very short period of time, and then it was his brother, Opetankenu. Opetankenu was not a very Christian-like person in the opinion of those settlers, of those European people, because he waged war, 1622 to 1644, against those settlers. And he pushed them from, let's say, the York River area back to Jamestown before he was captured. And as a great warrior, he was not handled in that manner at all as a great warrior. He was handled as a criminal. He was executed for murder, if you may. That brought to the end of the first great war between the Indian people or the native people. You won't find very much about that in history. You will find some of the great names in history as great chiefs, great war chiefs, great leaders, Sitting Bull. Some of those people out west that someone has portrayed as great men, but there were great men in the very early days. And I have to say this because this was some of our people, and it's not very much in history you're going to find. But that was one of the great awards that were fought. And coming out of that, 1658, this reservation was confirmed, and our people were not a removed people. This is merely one little village where we live on today, out of the great amount of land that were allocated in that confirmation to the Mattapamish and the Pamunkeys. research Mattapani history, you will not find an awful lot that is recorded under Mattapani. And yet, it seems that Mattapani are the oldest reservation in the United States. I will try to explain that to you. We talked about the early Confederacy. Okay, the Confederacy did not terminate, or were not terminated completely. When the first settlers came on, many years after that, it really never fully terminated until about 1880. Now, this was the time that the Pamunkey and the Mattapani tribal governments became independent of each other. This was did through a legislative act of the state of Virginia, when trustees were appointed to the Mattapani to take care of the lands that belonged to the Mattapani, the many different types of things that were jobs that were entrusted to the trustees and taking care of the Mattapani. Likewise, that was the Pamunkey. I had the privilege of talking to a young man this morning from William and Mary College. Seems as if he's been doing some research on the Virginia Indians, purely. I think what he was looking for was something that he could do, dissertation or something of that sort, for himself, even though it was something that was interesting to me when he called this morning and asked me about the Indian Trade and Intercourse Act. He asked me, did I know anything about it, or if I had been made aware of this particular situation, or if the Virginia Indians had file any kind of suit or claim under that particular act. Those of you that do not know what I'm referring to when I said the 1790 Act, which is the Indian Trade and Intercourse Act. Dr. McNulty, would you like to?
Not a quick summary. In 1790, the new federal government took unto itself the sole right to deal with Indian lands and Indian people, and that's what the 1790 Act stated. However, the wording of it has been reinterpreted recently. Originally, the wording said, we are responsible for Indians and land in Indian country. And that was taken to mean Indian lands and country that the federal government was about to begin dealing with out west. And reservations like the two Virginia reservations, Mattapani and Pamunkey, which had a treaty with the colony of Virginia, were said to be out of the picture. In 1975, that 1790 Act was redefined so that Indian country now by definition is any Indian reservation regardless of who the treaty is with. So now you are standing in Indian country and the federal government is now responsible for protecting Indian rights here. And some Indian people throughout the East are trying to get formal federal recognition. At present, the Mattapani and Pamunkey have only formal state recognition, which they've always had. And the question that you got this morning was, are you applying formally for federal recognition? They have the right to do it. They have a good chance of getting it if they ever do it. I've been contacted by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, by the way. Steve Baraka says, go tell those people they really ought to try it. They've got a good chance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, they've got a wonderful chance.
Thank you. I were made aware of that several years ago.
Mm-hmm. I thought you must be aware.
Right. I received a letter from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and also from Interior Department, mm-hmm. asking if we would like to file application. Mm-hmm. And I brought it before the council, and they said, no, we're satisfied as we are now. So in response, I received another telephone call, and they asked if I would fill out forms just to have on record, just to have on their records as to our status. We were made aware at that particular time that we were not of the of course, the Pamunkey always, whatever matter of the Pamunkey or vice versa, still hold the same status one way or the other. But we were made aware at that particular time that we were one of the most favored tribes to gain federal recognition. We have not filed for it. It seems that the people are well satisfied where we are. I don't know for what reason. I won't get into that.
That'll federal recognition would mean? What kind of change would come to the reservation?
Federal recognition would mean a lot of red tape. that's what it amounts to. I had the privilege several weeks ago of going out to Yakima Indian Reservation out in western Washington, and I talked with the chairman, the now chief of the chairman, executive director, and their council, where we have six councils. It's a little bit larger than our reservation. They have something like 3.1 million acres, but we have 125 acres. So they have a wee bit more than we have.
So they need 12 people on their council, at least.
Yes. The only problem is they have a Bureau of Indian Affairs set up right in their office where they have tribal council. Well, when I say office, I mean they have their office building spread out. It's about three stories, and it's spread out like from here, taking the Almonds residence, the church, and back around here. That's the complex. And this is their office for their tribe. Well, it's incorporated tribe, which is it's the Yakima Nation. And when I say red tape, it's exactly what I'm talking about. 8 months ago, to get away from what we were talking about, because she did say a little bit ago that we are familiar with some of the national Indian problems. About 8 months ago, the word seeped out from the Secretary of Interior, his office, Mr. Watts, that there were some six tribes or six nations that were being investigated because of the large amount of funding that had been allocated for those tribes, and they were still in the process of seeking more funds. They were trying to figure where this money had gone to and how it had been used. Now, 10 years ago, we did not have, and I said we, Indian people did not have people on the hill as liaison people to do certain things for us. But we have today. And I were informed of these transactions that were going on. And about 3 weeks later, then it come out, this is just happening, like it just happened yesterday. We had known about it, like a month ahead of that. And they were having quite a bit of a turnaround there in Washington because the information had leaked out. And these tribal leaders had received the information, and they were responding to it 3 weeks prior to the time that it should have been released. And it played a havoc. So this just gives you some general idea of what is taking place in the Secretary of Interior's office. I mean, he is doing things and saying things that it's devastating in many instances.
But rock music.
Speaking about the land and the
Beach Boys, did it?
The way the lands had been deleted from our reservation. I said all of that to say one thing. When I spoke about large area of the Yakima and our large reservation here, which is 125 acres, 1658, when our reservation was confirmed, 1662, just a few years after the reservation was confirmed, it appeared that the chief of the Mattapani, according to our records, chief of the Mattapani leased land to a European individual or individuals, somewhere like 5,000 acres. And he was compensated very nicely, I think, whatever that means. what it was, who knows what a match code is in there? I've never been able to truly find that. I've had people tell me that it's a certain kind of a cloak that was used by some of the British people, but just like, it's a leather mantle, that's all it is, something, a cape that you throw around, and 50 of them for 5,000 acres of land. And I say again that our people never really own land, so you can't sell what you don't own, right? You can't really sell it what you don't own. Now, they used the land, and this was designated for him, just as this area of land that we, my wife and myself, have here is designated for us to use as long as we live on it. But once we leave it, whether we move away or if we die, the land automatically reverts back to the tribal government. The same thing happened then. We don't own the land. And it appeared that when this great chief back at that time, when we come back, he says, well, I'm ready to move back to my village. They told him, you're sorry. Now, this is not really the language they use, but this is what it boils down to. This is the bottom line. We are sorry, but we have signed on the dotted line. Now, just imagine, if you went to another country and knew nothing about the language, knew nothing about anything, and someone gave you a piece of paper, you put an X on it because they said, mark an X on it, and then you come back later on. I don't even know if he marked the X on it. We don't even know that somebody who records it for us. We don't know. He didn't have any say in court at the time, so anyhow, he lost his village. Now, this is a due process of how lands were deleted from Indian people all over the ages of time, and even up until now. And when I say up until now, you will say, wait a minute, you're talking foolishness. That's true. The Chesapeake Corporation come to West Point. See that big pile of chips down there just across the Monkey Road? Isn't that the Chesapeake Corporation? They own land around the reservation. They came in about 2-3 years ago and surveyed something like 27 acres of land away from the reservation. About a year and a half later, they called themselves negotiating with the tribe or some of the personnel of the tribe. And they made a donation of 27 acres of land to the United tribe. They take it away and then they give it back. And said, we made that donation. So it's gone in record that the Chesapeake Corporation donated 27 acres. They merely
took that off the taxes. Took that off the taxes.
Sure, that's all what it's about, you know. I mean, it's no secret that we do not have an established boundary. It's no secret that we do not have an established boundary for the simple reason. Land has been deleted from the reservation from time to time. And we are a poor people, we are a small group of people, we don't have that kind of money to go in to go to litigate to prove these facts. We have a copy on the back wall there in 1812 where a petition was drawn to delete land from the tribal reservation. So all of this is in violation of the 1790 Act I might mention something about the 1790 Act. I referred to this young man this morning. He wanted to know if there had ever been any litigation or anything pertaining to the Virginia Indians and this particular act, and I said, of course it has been. Well, he says, I can't find it in any of the records. He said, I've searched and I can't find anything. I said, well, I said, one of the main reasons is because it was settled out of court. I say, the Native American Rights Fund, which is a legal Indian law firm that I've been involved with for the last 11 and a half years, handled the case, and that is the Monkey Railroad. But anyhow, the case was settled out of court, and the railroad company did pay for the usage of the railroad cost reservation for that period of time, with the provisions that every 10 years they could renegotiate, and whatever fees that would be agreed upon. County of Kingsley would not receive taxation on that parcel of if you would happen to go into research for these particular things that cases had been litigation through court, you probably would not find that much. But if you started to dig in a little bit deeper and went into the right area, you'd find the whole kick and caboodle of it, because this had to have been ratified by Congress, because it was based on the 1790 Act. So the Congress was involved with it, the President of the United States was involved with it, the Governor of the State of Virginia, or his representative, were involved with this particular case. The same thing with the case up in New England, Maine, saying that was the way it was handled, who was held. So, much larger case, it was the first largest land claim case, I guess, in the United States.
Is that Old Town?
Yeah, Old Town, Passamaquoddy, and Penobscot. At this point, maybe someone might have a question. I would ask you to speak up, because I'm a little far of here. I did not put my hearing aid on this morning. It just doesn't work well for me. Any questions? And we will move on into a little more, but I wanted to give you an opportunity here. Something that you did not understand that we have talked about.
How long
is
custody?
How long now? I'm going to have to ask you this, all due respect. Which one are you referring to?
Well, we came a few years ago to the museum, and the chief, who was arrested.
That's enough. He is referring to the late Chief Gustavo, not the late Chief Gustavo. There's been several. That's the reason I asked you.
Yeah,
okay, O.T. Gustavo, Huskanawana. That's the gentleman you were referring to. He passed away some 13 years ago.
Yeah. It's a good while ago.
Yes. Now, his son passed away last August. Last August. Which was also an assistant. The late Chief O.T. Costello, his picture is, let me point it out to you that you might be able to see. Okay, I guess this would be a better one, but those of you that can see from this area here, or here, that's the late Chief. And that's Huskanawana. Where's Thundercloud?
Over here.
I have a larger painting
over here. Over here. There's a painting right there.
That's what I'm looking for. Oh, yeah, here we go. She moves things around, I can't get it. He passed away last August. It was Huskanawana's father that was chief in the early 1900s, very early 1900s, and then was a chief in between, and a couple of chiefs in between, and then it was his son, which is Huskanawana, and grandson over here was his assistant.
What was his father? Grandson.
No, that's Jacob Thundercloud. No, we have a picture of Grandson on that back row over there. Are there any other questions? They're my parents.
Oh,
we've had a lot of people come in and say, this gentleman here, mistaken him for a governor. Something on all of our history.
opt-in. And I sent them a prospectus, and they sent a letter right back, please send in chapters that you completed. I completed it up to 1649, so I typed up and sent them what I had. And I'm still waiting for a couple. They're apparently reading it slowly.
Yeah.
So whenever I find out anything about that, I'll let you know.
Okay.
I sent you an article last fall on the non-reservation Indians from 1800 to 1930.
Yes.
Yeah, I sent that out to all the chiefs
right.
and all the friends as well.
Yeah.
I revised that in final form, and I sent that. It's supposed to be coming out this spring.
Did that same cutting you off? Did you? It was a second article you were mentioning that you were going to send. I never received that.
That's probably the revised copy. I haven't sent those copies out.
No, it was something that you've been doing for. He is working with the Commission of Indian Affairs in Delaware. Frank Porter. Frank Porter, yes.
Was right. Frank Porter. That was the article,
okay.
Non-reservation. Okay. He was the editor of that.
Okay.
Frank has now got a position up in Gettysburg trying to help some of the local Indian people gain federal recognition. And I don't know where he was getting his original editing job. That's why I said that article was supposed to come out in Denver at least this morning. I don't know if it's going to be out on time. And I've got to call up Frank on the phone and call him to catch him in his office.
I think
that was that article.
Right. Okay. Okay. Something I wanted to say to you. I didn't think the light would handle history, but I didn't have it for us. I attended one of those meetings that the non-reservation Indians proposed. And so the commission, are you familiar with the commission?
I have met them only once.
Okay, well,
your
name was in as an alternate.
Was it really?
Uh-huh.
I never knew that much.
And I don't know whatever happened with it, but I felt very strongly as I had rather than an alternate. I felt that your name should have been in as then someone else's an alternate.
That's what Kathy Ross thought, and she sent my name in and said you ought to include her. And the first I even heard there was a commission was when they sent me a Dear John letter saying, we can't put you on, very sorry. And I said, put me on what?
Well, your name was submitted for an alternate.
Or do you mean the commission that is being formed?
Commission of Indian Affairs, the state of Virginia.
Did the legislation go through successfully?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I can't ever get people to tell me that. I've even talked
I can
to
get anyone
down.
To tell me, so don't feel bad. I had
okay.
to go over there and I had to, you know, I had to pry it with the, you know.
I feel better. Lewis Manor said he'd be sure and send me some information.
Well, they promised me faithfully that they would send me information. I wanted a copy of the bill itself, you know.
Oh, I've got that. I can send you
No, I mean of the bill that had been signed.
Oh, by
the
government. Yeah, I don't know that either. I'm going to see if I can dig it up this summer. I'm going to get about 6 weeks at the end of the summer.
I'm real aggravated with it because North received a request to work with them in the very early days. Okay, so one of our lawyers came in and drafted the first resolution. And we never heard any more about it, so therefore, I didn't, you know, we're not aware of it. So we're not aware of it at all. She came in a little later on.
Later on.
Right. And then Kathy McGee, which was the lawyer. Do you know her?
I met her.
I don't know that I've met her. I probably have.
I met her at the Fall Festival. That's about the only time I've seen her. In fact, that's the only time I met with the non-reservation folks before the actual testimony in November.
Now, I read the resolution that Olinda did for them. And I don't think it's the one that they turned in. I don't think they particularly wanted it that way because they used the mathematical monkey along with the non-reservated groups.
Oh, really?
Sure they
for
did.
For the commission?
Yeah. No.
No.
For the state recognition.
As if you didn't have it already.
Didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, the whole thing is
I think it was something that they felt was a need to get the thing going right now, you know.
Yeah, perhaps so.
I think that's why. I was very much disenchanted because of the tactics were used, because the same tactics were used in that particular thing I talked about a little bit ago, manipulating people, you know.
Yeah.
And,
Frank Porter says that the Lumbee are prone to do that, but then Frank is now in business competition with this Lumbee group up in Washington,
right. Yeah.
So it could be sour grapes.
Yeah.
It's all very complicated and very interesting, but I'm more or less on the outside of it, in spite of myself.
Actually, Alinda Locke is a Lumbee, too.
Yeah. I know. Does she know anything about what this other Lumbee group is doing? Are they telling her anything?
I don't think so, because I asked her about, did she know anything about, you know, the Pamunkey and the Mattapan being admitted?
Yeah.
She says no. She says only the two tribes, just the Chickahominy and the Rappahannock, were the only two she had to deal with.
Oh, it is strange.
So,
it is really strange. Well, I'm glad they got
I don't know that it's going to have any impact on the reservations, but some of the people on the reservation are very, very much disturbed.
Well, the whole thing was done clandestinely.
Yeah.
It begins to look that way. Anyway.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. And even the scholars on the commission, the original commission,
mm-hmm.
didn't ask the right questions. And they didn't consult people like me or people like Frank Porter.
Right. Yeah.
It was really peculiar. It wasn't just the non-reservation Indians who neglected to do that. It was people like Lewis Cannery who ought to know better.
Yeah, well,
I was very surprised.
I don't know what it was that...
I've long since got over
really,
my sadness of being left out, though.
I really never really took any active part. And there was any of the early meetings. I only went to one of the meetings, and well, that must have been a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
I've been to an awful lot of meetings, due respect.
You travel a great deal. I know. I was telling my carload as we drove up, we all had to time it very carefully so these folks would be home because they're even more stacked up than we are at school.
Yeah, well, I just hope everything works out. I think it's an awful lot of prestige kick for a handful of people that I don't know who designated the authority to these people to do anything. I mean,
well, now it's the governor who does it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about in the beginning.
Oh. They even left out Chief Atkins. He told me so himself.
Well, he told me the only document that I saw with any signatures on it was his signature.
Uh-huh.
One document, one copy of a document. It was a letter of request, and it had other names on it, you know, but they were not your signatures, just type your signatures. And I'm not sure that he signed that. Somebody told me that he said manipulated him into signing the documents that he was sorry he ever signed. I don't know. I think maybe that may have been the one, but. NARF is a pretty large organization, and to request assistance and then, you know, just push you aside like hot potato, you know, it's bad business. I mean,
yes.
They should have had the common decency to say, okay, we are sorry, but we will not be needing your services. I mean, a short note would have been sufficient. And
they just got silent pushing.
Left us hanging.
Oh,
you know?
That's strange.
And
that is strange. Very bad.
Real weird. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Gosh.
Oh. So, but with that, that's what all of the new activities that I know is going on, except we will be engaged in the Pamunkey boundaries. Well, you know, that's been pending for quite a while.
It's a case I'm not very familiar with.
Are they
going to do a survey?
Right.
Survey?
I'm not positive what they want yet. I'm not positive they want to know about the Aboriginal boundaries. Boundaries 100 years ago,
yeah.
Or the boundaries today.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The way I understood it is that some lands were deleted from the reservation some years ago, not too many years ago, 10, 15, 20 years ago, something like that. Oh, yes. It's a marshland, the way I understood it. And I heard something about it back then. I'm not positive. This is second, third, fourth hand. Just as soon as you had to say something about it, not to mention my name, but I heard that one of the people on the reservation claimed the land and then sold the land himself. You know, he received the royalties from the land. should have been long to try to that's what I heard some years ago. Well, I guess 10, 15 years ago I heard. And it was somewhat of a stir up about it.
Yeah.
The tribe said the land belonged to them. He said the land belonged to his parents. And after he passed away, he sold it to somebody. So I think maybe that's what it's all about. I understood that they did get some 35 acres back. That had been deleted from the reservation, and two sawmill seats had been cut from time. So that would put it 100 years ago that it was deleted. And some of that courthouse, the way I understood it, Chief Cook told me about it. He said some of that court had done some research, and they found that the land belonged as far back as they could go with. It's no deed to it, and all at once here come a deed for 35 acres of land, you know. And then the wealth of this land belongs to the punk in it. So, well, if it belongs to him, give it back to him. North is going to be having the case on, and I think maybe since the railroad is all settled and squared away, then they can go through with this particular thing. But they could not. I think it was waiting until the cooling off period for that thing to get things settled down. Yeah. And to push issues too fast, sometimes it can be more detailed.
It's possible the boundary may be larger than what is claimed now.
Right.
I see. Well, I found some documents about there was supposed to be a land sale in 1828. A law was passed enabling it. I've never been able to find in the courthouse whether the land was actually, in fact, sold. It sounded like about 300 acres.
200. This gentleman was telling me about the Pamunkey.
Uh-huh.
Okay, called the Pamunkey Field.
I hadn't heard that called.
Yeah, that's what he was telling me. He said it was Pamunkey Field, and he says it was 1820-something.
1828 is when the law was passed.
Okay,
yeah.
He said that the state had that land sold.
They had the enabling act.
Yeah.
The deed would have gone to the courthouse burned up, so I've not been able to find the deed. Though, if somebody else can go through the tattered remnants.
He was telling me this morning something. I only had a few minutes to talk with him, and we were squeezing everything in we could.
Yeah, really.
I was stupid enough not to even get his mailing address. So I don't know if I'll be able to.
Is he faculty of the
No, it seems as if he was a student. I'm not positive. I jotted it down on a piece of paper.
Yeah, if he's faculty, I'd probably know of a name at least.
I probably would call.
Whoever he is, he's not got to touch with me, which is odd.
Oh, you mentioned a little bit ago, Kathy.
Yeah.
Did you get to see her?
Oh, I see her every Tuesday.
Is that right?
We're in study groups getting ready to go with a bunch of faculty from ODU to Africa.
I met her.
That came through.
I don't know if she mentioned to you at the in Chicago. Chicago.
Yeah.
Did
she
tell you?
She told me. She was so pleased to have that conversation. She enjoyed you immensely. No, she's up for tenure. We will know in another week whether she's got it. And if she gets it, it means job security, and also she gets to go to Africa.
Right, she was telling me something about that. Yeah.
Oh, we're both just thrilled. We're going to study development there, and I'm going to study the relation among tribes to see how they are fitting into developing countries. Because I keep seeing the same things. I was reading about Russia last night, the developing country that it was in the 18th century. I see the same process. And if we can get enough knowledge about the process, we don't have to be taken by surprise when tribes want to organize and do something effective.
Yeah, she was telling me something about that. Hopefully, if you could get everything worked out the way you want it.
Yeah, well, it depends upon her tenure.
She also, I thought, was very decent. She said that it would hamper